Partners. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear Beth there?
Yep.
Good. Well, we're well into the practice period that Sojourn Roshi is leading and that Andrea is serving as the Shuso at Sojourn's right hand. And it seems like a couple of themes have been marked out for this practice period. And I'm going to try to talk about them to some extent, but hopefully in a different, coming from a different tack than Sojourn Roshi and the Shuso. There've been sort of two signal koans that have come up in the first couple of weeks. One is Sojourn Roshi's class, somehow in the last 2 months, I don't know exactly how it came up, but you've developed a passion and an interest for looking at the various manifestations of light.
All my life.
All his life. Oh, okay. Oh, so it's not in the last 2 months. And that may either simultaneously come from or be the cause of the fact that in an earlier turning of this life itself, Sojourn was a painter. Painters deal in light and color, form, and the form and essence. So the koan that he began, I'm just going to read a little bit. I'm just going to refer to this. It's case 86 of the Blue Cliff Record. Zen Master Yunmen gave an instruction saying, "Everyone has his or her own light. If you want to see it, you can't. The darkness is dark, dark. Now, what is your light?" And there's a further unwinding of this koan, but he's been talking about that. But every person has his or her own light. The koan that he gave the Shuso to talk about is from case 19 in the Mumonkan, in which Joshu, Jiaozhou, the famous Zen master, at the time a young man, I believe, of about 19, asked his teacher, Nansen, "What is the way?" And Nansen, or what is the Tao? Tao or Do translates as, we translate it as way. It's actually more, I think it's more complex than that. But what is the way? And Nansen replied, "Ordinary mind is the way." And there, again, I'm not going to explicate this koan because that's your job. But that word ordinary is, maybe it's ordinary, maybe it's not so ordinary, whatever it means. So ordinary mind is the way. And Joshua asked, "Shall I try to seek after it?" And Nansen replied, "If you try for it, you will become separated from it." So these, I think, are these are threads that are weaving together in our practice period. So I'm going to talk about and vocalize in various ways about light and perhaps about darkness today. I'm thinking in discussions with a couple of people who've been around here for a long time. One person's question was, why are we studying this? Kind of, what's the use of it? You know, what's the, what do I, it didn't resonate with this person, the question of light. I'm paraphrasing people. Another person the next day said, "Oh, this is the most exciting thing we've ever studied. You know, I'm so glad we're studying. This is completely relevant to my life. You know, it's like, I'm so glad." So there's your, you sort of maps out the in brackets the range of concern. But it's helped me to think, well, what does this mean to me? For some reason, two things that came very quickly to mind. One was the purported last words of Goethe, the German poet, novelist, playwright, when he died in 1832. His last words were, "More light." Now, actually, he wanted the servant to open the shutters, but he said, he called to a servant and said, "More light," and then he traced a word in the air, and he moved in his chair, and then he died. Leaving behind a kind of this literary koan. You know, his last words were koan, "More light." What was it that he was seeking? What was it that he had manifested all of his life? And that he was not ready to do without, even at the last moment. I think my attitude towards light and the utility of it is probably best articulated in a song, and you all know it. I'm going to sing it. You're going to sing it, and we will be relieved from our ordinary chanting style, which is I often like to characterize it as our chanting style is one note that goes flat. This has a melody, and you can. You will all know it. Why, when you move from one room to another, does the guitar always retune itself or detune itself?
Sing louder than that. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. You gotta sing so they can hear you at the Harriet Tubman house. Well, when I see my neighbor coming, I'm gonna let it shine. Yes, when I see my neighbor coming, I'm gonna let it shine. When I see my neighbor coming, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Will this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Yes, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Well, when I'm in the Zendo, I'm gonna let it shine. Yes, when I'm in the Zendo, I'm gonna let it shine. And I'm in the Zendo, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. One more time. Will this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Yes, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine.
So just some background on the song. The song was written by a gentleman by the name of Harry Dixon Lowes in about 1920. He was a it was written as a gospel children's song. People think it's a very old song, but actually, it's not a spiritual. It was composed in the 20s, but it's so embedded in the rhetoric and language of the gospel tradition, then it sort of made its appearance. It was collected by this guy named John Lomax in Texas. In 1939 for the Library of Congress. Actually, that recording is online. I listened to it the other day. It's just gorgeous. Slightly different melody with a young African-American woman singing. It is so sweet and, just cuts right to the heart. And then it was incorporated it sort of made its way into the civil rights movement by way of a place called the Highlander Center in outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, and then became, as did We Shall Overcome and We Shall Not Be Moved, all of which were traditional songs that sort of entered through this process of dissemination. But where the song comes from, I think, is very interesting. I didn't know the verse of gospel. And I think it's relevant to what we're talking about. It's from the Gospel of Matthew 5:16, and that verse is, "You are the light of the world." Does this kind of resonate with what we've been talking about? You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before people, that they may see fine works and give glory to God who is in heaven. So I really appreciated reading this verse. You are the light of the world. A city on the hill cannot be hidden. This is the same kind of spiritual language, I think, that we find in Yunmen, saying everyone has his own light. There's a resonance there that's, I think it flows through all of the so many of the spiritual traditions, all the spiritual traditions. And
it's also true. Catherine reminded me about, so the Buddha here has a halo. This is very common iconographic element in Buddhism, but you also find that I was doing a little research. Of course, we can recognize it from medieval Renaissance painting, where all the Christian religious figures have halos, but you also see it in Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Indian iconography. Sometimes highly stylized, but it's like, where did that come from? That came from, I believe, people perceiving the light that each of us, particularly, they were seeing it in these religious figures. But in our way of thinking, everyone carries or embodies this light. And the light I think one of the reasons that we are studying this is simultaneously to understand ourselves. This is why I'm studying it anyway. To understand myself, even though I cannot see my own light. I can't see it you can't see it, but if you look really carefully, even in the ordinary things of our day, sometimes you can see, you can catch a glimpse of the reflection of your light in others. And you can very clearly see their light. So we may not, some people actually see these halos and auras. I'm not one of them. But this matter of each being having their own light is compelling to me. In the song, there's an activity implied in the light. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. It's there. I'm going to uncover it. It's interesting. I was looking, I'll sort of come back to this, I believe. I was looking at, we have this text that we chant, the Sandokai, emerging of unity or difference. And it's like some kinds of Zen topics, whenever you Google them, at this point in time, often the first or second or third thing that comes up, if you're talking about the Sandokai or some Soto text, is a lecture by Sojin Roshi. That comes up very frequently. I don't know if any of you have done those searches. So there was a lecture that that you gave in Rohatsu Sesshin of 2000. And where you were referring to, what you said was, I think it is very important to always look at the other side or look underneath this covering, this emotional or intellectual covering. So in order to let your light, this little light of mine, shine, I have to remove the coverings, which means I have to see what they are. This is precisely the activity, this is the main activity we do in this room. This is the main thing we're doing. This is what we're doing not as a purpose to accomplish in Zazen, but as the function and activity of Zazen is removing the coverings, removing the husk and shell of our thinking, of our beliefs, of the ideas that we have about our personality. These ideas that we have, all they do is mask the light. And what the song is saying, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. You know, in the gospel, Christ is saying, you are the light of the world. So you have to remove these coverings of various afflictions of mind, greed, anger, delusion, in our terms, in order to let that light shine forth. And when that light shines forth, then it's a liberative force for all beings. So this light, what Sojourn Roshi was calling, as we were studying a classical Dogen last week, divine light or radiance. The divine, whatever we call divine, without getting into a lot of technicalities, lives, it is manifest within us and comes forth from us. And it's interesting because there are a lot of other, I went through a whole bunch of songs and I realized that they all were talking from the other direction. I won't say they were talking about something else, but some of my favorite songs is a gospel song called Light from the Lighthouse. Let it shine on me, let it shine on me, let the light from the lighthouse shine on me. That's the divine light from outside shining, perhaps resonating so that you come alive and meet it with your own light, but it's still, there's some directionality from above. Another song in a similar tradition, Let the Light Shine Down on Me. It's like, it's not saying what Jesus is saying here, you are the light of the world. He's saying, you know, you have to become a vessel for this light that God is shining down on you, and that's not particularly our way, or that's actually not what we're working on. We're working on this matter of being the light of the world ourselves. Let that light shine down. Let that light shine from within. That light that actually exists everywhere. That pervades the universe. As a child, I was afraid of the darkness. I slept in a room and I had to have the light on in the bathroom. And even in that, with that small amount of illumination, I felt that the darkness was very close. And in that darkness was everything fearful that I could conceivably imagine. And I'm remembering now, like every, I think probably till I was 6 or 7, I slept in a room upstairs in the house, and at some point in the night I would call my father, who was sleeping downstairs, and I needed him for reassurance. And so he would come upstairs and basically just put me back to bed. But he would bring the light of his presence, the light of his confidence, the light of his love into the room and dispel the fears that I found in the darkness. For some reason, I was thinking of that today. And now I find the darkness very comforting. So there's, in Zen, there's a couple of ways that we talk about light and darkness. They seem to be, you could imagine them as contradictory, but they aren't. And we talk about, in this way that we've been talking in our classes, we're actually talking about light as enlightenment, as the activity of enlightenment. As we're saying, it's not like you're looking, you're aspiring to reach a place where I'm just sitting here, oh, just glowing and radiating, and isn't it good? And everybody will benefit from my radiant presence. I don't think that's happened yet, right? This light comes with the obligation of activity. It comes with the bodhisattva vow to save all beings. And even though you don't know how to do that, and it's an impossibly vast task, one is continually coming from one's own inner resources to bring that forth and to allow some light, even if you can't see it yourself, to allow some light to enter into the lives of people who need it, to be, in a sense, you know, we have one of our texts that we read is called The Transmission of Light, and it's the record of our lineage, how this enlightened nature was transmitted from one person to the other. And I think this is what is not the rarefied work of just these Zen masters, but it's the ordinary way of our Zen life. Ordinary mind is the way. That ordinary mind was just my father responding to my call from the top of the stairs every night and never showing the slightest irritation or annoyance or, you know, being called out of his bed in the middle of the night. There's never had any feeling that this was burdensome to him. And so he would come. That is the transmission of light. Each of us is capable of doing this in an infinite number of ways in our life. And in that sense, dispelling the darkness, as he was helping me to dispel the darkness, the fear that I felt in the darkness, which was not necessarily, that's not the true darkness. But it's what, as a child, I was worried over, what I felt arising. So we talk about, in the one sense, we talk about light as enlightenment, as enlightened activity, and we talk about darkness as delusion. In the other sense, we talk about light when we chant the Sandokai, the merging of difference and unity. That's a text that kind of unpacks and also deconstructs this notion that we have of light as differentiation. So in the light, you can see everything in its uniqueness and difference. And darkness light as differentiation or relativeness, and darkness as kind of unification or sameness or absolute. it's not, these are not, so in the Sandokai, the verse, the part that's directly speaks to this, says, in the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and darkness oppose one another like front and back foot in walking. I'm not crazy about that translation, actually. Oppose. You could also say light and darkness complete one another, like front and back foot in walking. You know, if you don't have 2 feet, well, you can hop, but you can't walk. So the complete activity involves both of these aspects. I would recommend to you the entire text on this matter, Branching Schemes Flow in the Darkness, but this is Suzuki Roshi's lectures on the Sandokai. And he talks about the words in Japanese implying this very close, he says there is a very close relationship between light and darkness. And actually darkness itself is light. Darkness or brightness is within your mind. But it's also, he then goes on, there's a wonderful metaphor he talks about preparing, I guess they were preparing food for Ed Brown's wedding. So in the light, you may dish out various foods separately, putting them on different plates. This is soup, this is salad, this is dessert. That's the light. This is the light of differentiation. But when you eat, various foods will be mixed up in your tummy. Then there is no soup, no bread, no dessert. At that time, they all work together. So in the darkness of your belly, as they're churning around with the digestive juices, there is activity. And that activity is taking place in the darkness. Said, when it is in your tummy, it is darkness. But even in darkness, there is still lettuce and soup and everything. The food is the same, only as it changes its form. Only as it changes its form does it start to work. In utter darkness, things happen that way. So, we can't separate this light and dark quite so clearly. And yet, we have to manifest. We have to manifest this light. I'm going to close with a poem that Bob Rosenbaum sent me this week. I don't know, there's lots that we could talk about. Also, just, anyway, I was thinking also today of, in the realm of activity, the Dylan Thomas poem, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night. Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. I'm not going to read that whole poem, but it's exactly what Goethe was saying. More light. How do you bring forth light? As long as you're alive, in every moment. But the poem, I'm a little distracted, the poem that Bob sent me, and where is it? Oh, here it is, okay. It's by Wendell Berry. It's very short. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark, go without sight. And find that the dark, too, blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. To go in the dark with the light is to know the light. To know the dark, go without sight, and find that the dark, too, blooms and sings, and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. Maybe there's time for just a few comments or thoughts on your part. I'm not gonna tie this all together.
You opened with a rhetorical question about why is it that your guitar changed its tune when it went to another room, and what came up for me is a question for you, which is why do we change our tune when we leave this room?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think it's the same answer, though. Although maybe it is. The guitar changed its tuning because essentially went from a warm space up in my attic through the cold into this room, which is a little colder. It got moved, maybe it got knocked, so it's causes and conditions. That's true for us. It's also causes and conditions, right? But the guitar has no delusions, I don't think. It depends on whether you think it's a sentient being or not. It's a responsive being. But we think there's a difference between this room and outside this room, right? We think that, oh, maybe things are more special or more rarefied or something. There's some difference that we think of between this room and outside this room, or and then even more outside the gate, which is why our practice, when we leave this room, ordinary Zen practice, you would turn towards the altar and bow as if you were finishing something and moving from one space to another. And our practice, that I think was Dzogchen Roshi's invention, was we stand at the door and basically we give a little shashu bow, the door is just a portal. It's actually, we're just moving from one room of the world into another. We acknowledge that we're going through a portal, but it's not different. So that's kind of where I would go with that.
Linda. Well, I wanted to tell my favorite flight story from Zen. It's in Kaz's book about Hakuin. So he was giving a lecture, and this uneducated, illiterate old lady is listening in the back row, and he's telling that if you have some kind of experience, then this light will come fill your whole body and everything will be light. So she goes home and she's washing pots and pans, and she has this experience, you know, just wow. And she goes rushing over to the monastery, and she rushes up to Hakuin, and she says, "It happened." And she's still got a pot in the hand, and she says, "It happened. The light just came crashing through my body, and everything's all light." So he says, kind of squinting, he says, "You're no light up your asshole." And she says, "Hey man, you're not enlightened yet." That's it.
And the rest is commentary. Someone else? Yeah, Barbara.
You brought to mind a scene in a video on MC Richards, and she's talking about a plant.
Who is she?
MC Richards did a book during the 60s called Centering.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And my husband, friends, and friends of hers very late in her life. And we got this wonderful video, but in it, she's talking about a plant. And the plant having this great spread above the ground, and also the plant having this great spread below the ground in the darkness, that's pretty much equal to what's up above. And she said there is a point, and the point is conceded to be one cell thickness between where the plant reaches for the dark and where it reaches for the light.
Mm.
And that one cell, she said, is where all creativity starts.
Mm-hmm. There's another thing that I'm remembering, thank you for that. Aiken Roshi often talked about, I think he talked about that book and that work, and the concept that I think he drew from it, if I'm remembering correctly, was complementarity. That the complementarity of dark and light, how these things work together to create the whole, without one or another of which it would be incomplete. Is there anything you would like to add before we close?
Well, when you were talking about the koan of ordinary light is the way, and you talked about you said if you go for it, you stumble past, or that's what I said, but but I think you forgot to say if you don't go for it. You
right.
Didn't say that part.
No, I didn't say that part. I wanted, yeah.
Maybe you can say it now.
Maybe you can say it now.
You're saving it for me.
Yeah, I was saving it for you. Actually, I didn't want, but you're right, it was incomplete, but can you just say that?
But if you don't go for it, nothing happens.
Right.
Blankness.
Right. So, yes, I wasn't trying to
I didn't
cut that short. Right. But it's...
Sometimes when you say something, we say something, you know, we're talking about one aspect of them, we want to get on with it, and we forget to say the other part.
Right, right.
That's all.
Thank you. Two more, then we have to stop. Michael?
In the same vein, you were talking about removing what hides the light, the greed, the anger, many other things, and to remove them, you have to be close to them. You have to be with them. It's the same kind of paradox.
Yes, and I think the paradox where I would take it also, and I thought this even as I was talking, is there's light within those states as well. There's light even within affliction, even within our greed, within our anger. There's light if we can turn it. If we can see it as light, as energy, then we can benefit others. If not, then we're caught in that pattern, I think, in those afflictions. John?
You said you didn't like this one versus translation in Sangokai, like front and back opposing one another.
Yeah.
An alternative that occurred to me is juxtapose.
Mm. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that the front and back foot is exactly an expression of this complementarity that we were talking about. And juxtaposition, you know, yes, they are next to each other in some way, and we need them both.
But not in conflict.
They're not in conflict.
Sort of opposed.
Yeah.
Connotation.
Yeah. And I don't know what the actual word is in the Chinese. Well, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of this day and this holiday weekend, right?
Yeah.
We'll be two nights to linger in the darkness. This is a big deal for us Zen students. And enjoy the rest of the practice period. Thank you.